episode 31 of Drunk on Comics, where with great beers comes drinking responsibility.
Fuck that, I'm not responsible. Outside of the driving part.
Yeah, that's the only part that really matters is the driving part.
Yeah, like that whole live, laugh, love. Fuck that. Drink, drink, drunk. That's where I'm at. Hey guys, welcome to Drunk on Comics. This is our podcast about comic books, conventions, nerdly little nuggets of fun. I'm Derek.
Tony.
There's Tony. We also got
Matt.
Matthew. What's up, guys? Kevin is still out of town on holiday vacation, so he'll be back. He's missed, but he's down in Indiana, where there's an awesome comic book store, by the way.
There are, maybe there's a couple awesome comic book shops in Indiana, but that's about all Indiana has going for it is a couple comic book shops. Which one are you thinking of?
Specifically. What the hell?
Pacifically.
Pacifically. Specifically.
The one in Hawaii?
Yeah. Pacifically. Isn't that an ocean? Specifically, it's one in Evansville that he stopped at. He put a little article up on our website about it this summer when he was down there. Gorgeous shop. I can't remember the name off the top of my head. I apologize.
So. I went to school in Indiana, small liberal arts school in Crawfordsville called Wabash College. It's awesome. Anyways,
shout
out to my alumni. But we used to go to a comic book in East Lafayette called Castle Comics, and they sold a lot of games and stuff. So there's some... Hey, Castle Comics, if you're in the West Lafayette area, they're pretty cool. Check them out.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool.
Well, listeners, this... episode is going to be a little bit different because really there wasn't shit that came out this week.
And also it's been a busy week. I don't know, there's a couple holidays or something in the mix, so.
Well, okay, let's get back to the main core of it. Cuz even if it had been a busy week in comics, we still would have done a normal podcast. How many comics did you guys buy this week at the shop?
Zero.
Oh, one.
Yeah. I bought five, and that was a stretch for me to buy five, because one of them was fucking Aquaman. Like, I'm trying to, like, I'm like, okay, you know. But two of the five were indies.
Okay.
The other two were...
Spider-Man!
Yeah. So this is going to be a superiorly amazing
Avenging spider-like...
podcast.
Sweet.
That sounds spectacular.
Damn it, I was hoping someone would grab
it. It's going to be on the interwebs.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, so a couple things. First, technically this is still off the shelf, and so technically still sponsored by Intercomics, which is inter-comics.com. Find them online. Awesome place for all your comic books, current subscriptions, etc. They ship worldwide. They're UK-based. Also a great place for some really fun blogs, so go check them out, inter-comics.com. Warning,
we're going to spoil number 700 plus every other book that we pretty much picked up.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to spoil it like you're probably going to spoil your New Year's resolutions like, you know, 24 hours after you make them.
Yeah, that's about right. No more fat chicks. Yeah, whatever.
After this one.
All right, so Amazing Spider-Man number 700.
Well, let's say before we get into the Amazing Spectacular, whatever the hell Matt called it, do you have any other books that you wanted to briefly talk about?
Well, I have Indie Turnpike.
Let's start off with that, because I know a good majority of this is just going to be Spider-Man, so let's keep that all on that.
Technically still falls under off the shelf, but because it is new this week. Indie Turnpike, this is kind of our little spotlight where we showcase one book that's not from the big two, which was fairly easy this week. although, actually, there were a lot of the indies that didn't even put books out this week.
Didn't want to compete.
I think I bought the only two new ones that looked relatively interesting to me.
Well, I mean, too, it is the holiday week. Everyone gets lazy this week.
Well, here's the thing. There were so many damn books out last week. I mean,
they could have pushed some of those to this week.
Yeah, I bought nearly 30 books last week.
Maybe they're all on vacation.
Yeah, well, they shipped all the books for this week last week.
Yeah, so...
So why not say, half these come out this week, the other half go out next week.
Because it's like waiting for your presents, you just want to open them now.
Yeah. Alright, so this week I picked up Deathmatch number 1 from Boom Studios, written by Paul Jenkins, art by Carlos Magno, and the cover that I got is by Wills Portacio. So, I was a little hesitant to pick this book up because it's another Battle Royale type comic. And with Avengers Arena already having their first two issues back to back, Second one being last week and the massive week
in our
it
week
was.
Of twos.
But this is honestly what a story like this should be. The story opens with a superhero named Dragonfly who just killed one of his former allies. And they give you a little background about how this guy, whose real name is Benny, got his powers. And there's a really cool nod to Superman, actually, in here when they're showing, like, him as a little kid. And he and his brother see one of the superheroes flying over his head. And Benny goes, "Look up in the sky." And his brother goes, "What is it, Benny? Is it a bird?" And I'm like, all right, that's kind of cool. But they give you a little bit more info in general on the other now 30 superheroes that are left besides Dragonfly and villains, actually, because they have some of both. Or as they call them in the book, they call them the good guys Supes, and then the bad guys are Fears, which I thought that was kind of a cool thing. And shows that they're all trapped. I mean, the basic premise here is that someone or something managed to capture 32 of the world's most powerful super beings, and they're forcing them to fight each other to the death. The cool catch on this is that when they pick these two people and put them in the arena, they're somehow brainwashed, I guess you can say, and can't stop themselves from fighting each other, even though they're still mostly aware of what they're doing. So it's like their bodies are acting on instinct, fighting each other, you know, but they don't necessarily want to. Paul Jenkins has got a ton of dialogue in this book and a lot of what I call the voiceover, you know, the little balloons that are up in the corner that aren't necessarily the speaking portions, but it flows really nicely. Normally, I think that bogs a book down quite a bit, but he isn't explaining things that the artist is already telling you. He's just adding to it. And I should point out that Magno's art in here is really nice. Tony, you got a question?
Well, yes. Are these now? These are established characters.
No,
from other things.
No, there's a cool part in the back that I'll explain.
Yeah, that's what I was getting to, which is pretty sweet.
Yeah. Now, if they are, I've never heard of them, but we'll come back to that. Anyway, nice shout out to Magno on his art and the colors. I don't think I mentioned were done by Michael Garland. They work really, really well in here as well. One of the most emotional parts in this book is when one hero whose name is Nephilim, he's like this huge four-armed rhino type beast, can't stop himself from killing Elektra, who is actually the woman that he loves. I mean, just pummels her, and it's actually a little bit tough to read. And the reason I wanted to talk about it is because of that type of stuff. For a book where you really don't know any of the characters, you connect with them really fast. Jenkins does an amazing job at making you feel empathy for these characters, and he makes them feel so real in a, I guess, what's really an unrealistic setting and world. This, honestly, is what a superhero book should be, as far as how the characters are drawn. I mean, the emotions on the faces of the characters, like the body positions and nonverbal communication that comes from them is great. Boom kicks out another awesome first issue, and it's only $1. So there's no reason that everybody shouldn't be buying this book. Add in smallest week ever in comics, and I think I just doubled down on all your excuses on why you can't buy this book. So getting to Tony's thing, in the back they give like little backgrounds on some of the characters, saying what issues they first appeared. As far as I can tell, they're all fictitious comic books.
Really? These characters aren't real?
No, the comic books that they're referencing, ass. But it does kind of give it that feel that, hey, cool, you know, these are long-standing characters when they're actually not, you know. So, but yeah, I mean, it feels like a book that's been around forever, but it's a great, you know, obviously it hasn't been, but it is really nice. So two huge mugs up on this book. Nice job to Boom and the rest of the creative team on this book. So that's Indie Turnpike.
All right. Well, that one was only $1. The other thing that I picked up, Spider-Man number 700.
$8. Yeah, but it was 100 and some pages.
Yeah, 104 pages, actually.
Yeah, so did you do the math on that?
That would be a couple pennies on yay, on
public school.
Kind of like 3 out of 5 is 30%. Something like that?
Yeah. 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Yeah. So, all right. So, here's where Off the Shelf officially kicks off with our amazing Avenging Spectacular
Superior
review of Spider-Man. So, Amazing 700.
Which cover did you get, Eric?
I got the cover by Oliver Coipel.
Which one is that? The main one?
This one. No, that's the main one, actually.
Oh, I know this is the main one.
But
I have to say, I like this one just... I think if it just...
Tony got the montage cover, because this is obviously not video.
I like the variant. I like the variant cover with that looks like Spider-Man number one, except he's got someone else in his arms.
Oh well, yeah, that was the Steve Ditko.
Yeah,
The shop that I go to.
I'm sure that one was pretty rare.
It was it was spoken for, and it was I think a 1 in 250 variant, and it was $250. So, for as much as I would have loved to have had it, I don't care that much, you know. So this book was written by Dan Slott. Pencils were by Umberto Ramos. Inks by Victor Olazaba. Colors by Edgar Delgado. And all 100 and some pages were lettered by Chris Eliopoulos. So,
there you go. Joe didn't do this?
Joe didn't do this one.
Yeah, Christmas off.
Well, Joe did do one of the other books that I read this week. So, let's kind of get into the basic story. Short version is that Doc Ock and Peter Parker have switched minds.
They have switched minds, but also kept their minds.
Yes, but share each other's memories as well, which that's kind of an interesting little twist. They both have, like, almost dual personalities going on at the same time. And in this book, here's your spoiler. So,
we don't need to get to the end right away. We can kind of get into...
Yeah, you always like to rush it, Derek. And they don't like it when you rush it. You got to go slow.
Hey, this is for
a medium pace.
it's all for me.
Okay.
And take that shampoo bottle and
stick it up my.
All right. Well, then Tony, why don't you fill in?
All right. First off, it starts off with Peter. Essentially, it's Peter Parker. That is who the character is. Peter Parker with Doc Ock. Mind in the body.
So just for the sake of storytelling here, let's say Spider-Man.
Okay.
Which Spider-Man is Spider-Man's body with Otto Octavius's mind. And then Doc Ock is Doc Ock's body with Peter Parker's mind. And so if you're talking about an individual, then you could either say Otto, which we know is in Spider-Man's body, or Peter, who's in Doc Ock's body.
Gotcha.
All right.
Rules are clear.
We have Spider-Man watching the TV seeing Doc Ock somehow escaped. And you then see Doc Ock, who has Peter's mind, trying to figure out a way to reverse this entire thing. Spider-Man is like, well, fuck, he's going to die soon. I'm just going to get out of town and he can just die.
I'm going to go to Brussels.
Yeah.
Go to Amsterdam.
Yeah. And when will you be returning? Tomorrow. Which was great. So you're going to spend the majority of your time in the air. Yeah, I'm good with that.
Yeah.
That, to me, just shows what this character is going to be and how different of a Spider-Man that it could be. I mean...
Yeah,
but
he gets called out for being a coward and a weakling.
And that's the thing that I liked. He also did not like his pride getting hurt. And he's like, well, screw this.
They called out Doc Ock for being a coward.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And a failure and a loser.
That's his pride.
Yeah.
And so he then, obviously, though, he's still doing the right thing in, playing the game of Spider-Man and saving those people and locking them up.
But he's not. He's using them as
a bait.
Yeah, or as blackmail, so that if Peter in Doc Ock's body does come and find Spider-Man, he can go, ha-ha, touch me and they're dead, you know.
He went back to the supervillain things. Yeah, at the same time, it is kind of like, yeah, why didn't Peter ever think about that? Especially if he's a card-carrying Avengers member. You know, whenever someone's coming after him personally, you know, hey, let's get all my loved ones, get them in a safe room.
Well, yeah, but the whole thing is that only two people actually know who he really is.
Yeah, but everyone keeps going after Peter Parker because of his affiliation with Spider-Man.
Right.
Because they're still too dumb to figure it out.
Just like Bruce Wayne getting Wayne Manor blown up because Batman.
Yeah, or that guy that's a newspaper journalist, but he looks a lot like Superman.
Oh, no, he quit the planet.
Oh, I know, that's right.
Print is dead.
Print is dead.
So,
So you get to this giant battle after Peter feels like he might have, or should I say Doc Ock with Peter's
Well, you can say Peter because it's the same thing as Doc Ock.
has found a way to possibly reverse it. I like throughout the entire setup before this final battle, one says I'm going to do this and detonate your secret base, and then Peter Doc Ock's like, I already did that before, so... Yeah. I already knew about that. And then another time when they were going to set up in another way.
It's like playing chess against yourself.
Yes.
They knew each other's moves, not only because they've done this fight so often, but because they're sharing their memories.
Now, let me ask you this. During that fight, did you think, before we spoil the end, did you think that Doc Ock and Peter were going to have their minds put back in their proper bodies?
I had a feeling that it was going to happen very easily, and it was going to be one of those things where the reason why Avenging Spider-Man is, or Superior Spider-Man is different is because he learned from this one thing.
Well, they already said that it wasn't going to be Peter. Like, we already knew that Superior Spider-Man was not Peter Parker.
But I also thought that they were going to be dual mind in there.
I thought both of them would be in the same mind. And Otto's body would fail.
See, that thought never occurred to me.
They'll just have split personalities and they'll be vying for control. Which is still a possibility. I mean, not to spoil the ending, but Peter Parker and Doc Ock's body does die.
Yeah.
So, but what made me curious
here's the thing. Like, the thing that was interesting before Peter actually died in Doc Ock's body is that some of his memories were already starting to have influence over his own personal body, the body of Spider-Man, and what Doc Ock, or Otto, I should say, was actually trying to do. And then in the end, when he, like, floods his mind with all of his memories as to why he is Spider-Man and why he does the things that he does, that was... To me, I think probably the most powerful point in the whole thing where Doc Ock's like sitting here going, wow, you know, I never had that, basically. You know, and that's one of the things. There was a great article online, and I apologize, I don't know where it's at right now, but there was a great interview with Dan Slott and I think Steve Wacker on there too, that they were talking to when they first wanted to do this, that they viewed Doc Ock or Otto Octavius as Peter Parker had he not had the loving family and the encouragement that he did, that they're basically the same person, opposite side of the coin.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why when...
Is it both because they have an affinity to animals or creatures with eight limbs?
That's partially it.
Okay.
They're both geniuses.
They're both white males.
Yep. They both have shitty haircuts.
Touché.
They both wear glasses.
They both their first names and their last names have the same letter.
Well, yeah, and
they're only one letter apart in the alphabet. Oh my gosh!
Holy crap!
But I thought the hood was supposed to be Parker Robbins was supposed to be Peter Parker.
That is amazing.
Irresponsibility.
But. Spectacular. All right, so
superior punnage.
So the thing about it is though is that you know they were both basically nerds that got picked on their entire lives, and they were both science geeks, and the difference was their upbringing and you know. Which I thought that was a really interesting point, which, because I haven't read enough Spider-Man, I didn't necessarily catch that myself, I gotta admit.
I have to say another huge point in the story was when he flatlined for, like, 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And he was dead, and he kind of saw the afterlife. And it was at that point that I started getting the sense of what was going to happen. And it was at that point when he's like, you know, don't I deserve this? And when Uncle Ben said, there's no scale that I'm weighing you on. You've deserved this more than enough. But right now, you can't let Spider-Man run his course of what he's doing right now. You need to get back there and somehow stop this. And it was at that point that I realized, holy shit, Uncle Ben just kind of told him, you don't owe anyone anything anymore. You've already deserved your spot up here. And I knew at the end... He wasn't going to switch.
So Peter Parker gets to be Uncle Ben. Well, Otto Octavius.
And actually he does in this too.
Yeah, I know.
But now one thing, this is a little bit of a side note. When Peter was flooding Otto's mind with all of his memories, all the good memories. Maybe it's just because I've seen the movie 8 million times, but I did have like a little bit of a flashback to the Crow movie.
Yeah.
You know, at the end.
Yeah.
Now, it's the opposite thing, because there he uses all the pain and suffering, you know, from his fiance.
But see, this is a point that I'm making. I've got a few predictions as to how this will all wash out in the end. And one of them is that Peter Parker will eventually come back as Peter Parker.
Yes.
And part of it could be that when he flooded him with all those memories, that Peter Parker's soul went back to its body, and now it's just laying dormant inside Otto Octavius. Another possibility is he actually is dead, and something else will bring him back. But it made me start to think of, but then what makes the soul of a person? Is the soul the mind and what the mind has, or is the soul something else? And I know we're talking, you know, it's metaphysics and also metaphysics in a comic book world, but I like consistency, and the soul seems to be something more than just the collective memories of a person.
Here's my thinking. Well, before we jump into that I do want to touch on two last points in the story at the very tail end, and then we can start really delving into this. There were two things that I liked in there. One was where Peter, dying in the body of Doc Ock, was saying, it's who we are.
Yeah.
I liked that.
Ooh, Venom. I mean, no.
And then I did like the fact that he did pull the whole "with great power comes great responsibility" line. Mm-hmm. That's one of those lines that you can be so easily ruined because it's so damn cliche, and I thought they did a beautiful job with it.
Mm-hmm.
So back to this, as to, you know, the mind and the soul and this and that, I have a feeling that because all of the memories are still in there, that Peter's body is going to start fighting against mm-hmm. Otto's mind.
That's my thought.
Kind of like a parasite, and eventually it's going to be pushed out.
I just don't see them going in that direction. I think,
okay,
for all intents and purposes, Peter Parker's soul is gone. He is gone for good.
Gone for good? You really think he's gone for good?
I think he's Uncle Ben.
He has not been Uncle Ben. I disagree with that wholeheartedly. I want to say
that, and we can't even call him Doc Ock because he is Peter Parker. He's got Peter Parker's memories.
He's not Peter Parker. He's Otto Octavius.
He's Otto Octavius Peter Parker. He's Otto Peter. Otto Peter Octavius Parker.
Hyphenated names.
He's OP. He's OP. He's Octavius the OPP.
Parker? Down with OPP.
Yeah.
Otto Peter Parker.
Yeah. Yes, he is OPP. All right.
And I just don't see them bringing back Peter. And we can't even call this person Octavius, though. It is Peter Parker's body. It is Peter Parker.
But it's not Peter Parker.
It's not Peter Parker.
Yeah, it's a different... Well, he's got to name himself something different, then.
Well, no. He's just because he's going by the name of Peter Parker does not actually make him Peter Parker. Kind of like Superman.
But it doesn't make him Octavius, either, because he's got...
No, he's still Octavius. He just said he's going to use all of... He's got Octavius's intellect, Octavius's will, Octavius's ambitions. The only problem is that... He keeps doing things that's like, wait, Peter Parker made me do that. So he is both. He doesn't want to do all the things that Peter Parker would do, and yet he keeps finding himself doing them. In order to know that, you'd have to read Avenging Spider-Man.
15.1, written by Chris Yost. Paco Medina did the pencils. Juan Velasco did the inks. David Curiel did the colors. Cover was by Paulo Rivera, and the letters, Joe Caramagna. See, told you we wouldn't leave him out even in a short video like this.
And I hope you all appreciate just how smooth that segue was.
That was crisp. Yeah, virtual. virtual because we're across the table and we're too lazy to stand up. Now, in Avenging Spider-Man 15.1, you see Otto in Peter's body acting as Spider-Man. And it's kind of cool because he's like, Peter Parker was an idiot. He never lived up to this. He was always found wanting. And you see him walking down the street to go see Mary Jane, and there's a little...
Yeah, he's like, why didn't he ever focus on his science? He was always distracted. He gets a phone call from Mary Jane. He's like, oh, God, that woman. It's like, oh, that's why he's always distracted.
Yeah, and then he starts flashing through, and you see a really sexy shot of Mary Jane. He's like, Parker, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
But... It was great because he's walking down the street to go see her, and a shop owner comes out. He's like, "Stop, thief!" And I was like, yeah, I could stop him, but you know what?
That's beneath me. And all of a sudden his arm comes out and clotheslines the dude, and he's like, I didn't mean to do that.
Which is fantastic, because there is true duality mm-hmm. in the character mm-hmm. of what he naturally would do and what he ends up doing. All right, it's finally my turn. My damn voicemail's going off. Although, I doubt people heard it because it's very, very quiet.
So, yeah, the Avenging Spider-Man helped. I was talking to Derek earlier about how I kind of like Michaela Maroney, I was not impressed.
Yeah, which is great. When you said that to me, I automatically saw the sour face.
Here's what I'll tell you. Like, I like the fact that the future moving forward is you'll have this complex Spider-Man who's got this duality, most likely.
A hell of a lot better technology.
And in a way to kind of say that, you know, this is where Spider-Man could be. Because I love in all the other comics, like whenever they talk about future stuff, they always look at Spider-Man and go, you, at one point, are going to save us all. You're going to prove that you are the greatest hero of us all. Probably sacrificing himself heroically for some future event or something. But that Spider-Man is that hero that sacrifices everything and asks for nothing in return. So that's why it really bugs me if it's not Peter Parker. Because Peter Parker deserves to get the accolades and be the hero that he's been through all these years. And that's why he's going to come back to eventually continue his legend story, because it's cheap to be stolen from
him. How about this, though? If, in the end, because Peter has saved the world countless times.
I think you could count them, but... You'd have to read all of them.
There at least, maybe even 700 times.
Okay.
You know. But if at the end, if he's able to turn Otto Octavius into a good man, isn't that really the ultimate?
Isn't that
That's not ultimate, to celebrate? Because Ultimate Spider-Man is now somebody else. Not Peter Parker.
Yeah.
It's Miles
Morales.
Miles Morales, yeah. Yeah, that's cool. But what this makes me feel like is like the Dark Reign, the Dark Avengers. Hey, you know what would be really fun is if we took a bunch of really like bad guys and made them pretend that they were heroes. But
here's the thing. He's not...
And Doc Ock was never really meant to be... He just wanted to be a brainiac guy and then...
And people picked on him. Yeah. He got pissed.
Because
he was bullied.
Yeah.
He was cyber bullied.
Because he called himself an octopus.
Well, yeah.
Could have picked something cooler. Like Otto.
Dr. Squid?
Dr. Squid?
You know, because then...
Squidworth. Then the kids would relate to him.
Well, he could have been Dr. Squid, because then he could have had more than the four arms, mechanical arms.
He could have a big beak, and then he could spit ink into people's eyes.
Well, octopus can spit beak, and octopus have beaks.
Yeah, sure.
But he'd have to have like more of a cone head than the round head that he does.
Yeah.
So, all right. What? I don't know. Matt, you didn't care for this.
I just didn't care for the fact that it just felt a little forced and like it's
so. Here's what feels forced.
I can switch. I get that we're in a comic book world and it's suspension of disbelief, but zap you with a golden octobot, brain switched.
Like, no, they explained what? It. You didn't read 698, the one that I wanted you to read, which explained. Or no, was it 699?
They actually explained some of it in.
It was in here slowly too. Using all that tech that was giving access to the neurons in the brain to then use that one golden
and
orb.
Started this process. Apparently, they were utilizing shit back from issue 600.
Yeah, so not really quick, man.
Okay. Fine.
It was a slow process to build up to this.
Fine, but still, it doesn't... I guess it just... It bugs me that... I don't know. It just bugs me that...
It would have bugged me more if Peter Parker just zapped back in his body.
Yeah, that would have bugged me. That would have bugged me, too.
So what would have made you happy, then?
I don't know what... this is why it's... But this is the point. This is the point I'm trying to make. It's because I know there's a lot of fans out there who are really pissed off about this. Like, seriously off about this. And I can understand where they're coming from, because it's like... But Peter Parker's supposed to be there. This isn't fair. It isn't fair. And even reading the beginning of Avenging Spider-Man, where Otto Octavius is like, not only did I kill Spider-Man, I took his life. How evil is that to completely steal not only the person's life and they're dead, but then to take over all the goodness that they had?
He didn't take over his...
He did. He has.
Yeah.
He is Peter Parker.
But he didn't.
He wants
kill
to get with Mary Jane? He can get with Mary Jane.
Yeah, but at the end, it was.
Yeah, but the great thing is.
Tony,
that...
how did he not kill him by switching his mind into a dying body? That's killing him.
Well, Tony already said that he's actually real dead, not comic book dead. Which, by the way, Tony, I have two things for you. Number one, we understand what comic book dead is.
Yeah.
Number two, give me some kind of, like, stats that actually show where you can go, you know what? They've done it over and over and over again where they kill people and they keep them dead.
Since the death of Superman, death has been dead in comic books.
So you take, okay, so you bring Peter back to do what? The same thing
Now he's changed.
How has he changed? He was in heaven, and Uncle Ben was telling him the same thing.
But this is that's my question, going back to the soul of the intellect.
How would he change?
Because is the soul dead, or did he at the end say, that's how we always behave with great powers? Did his soul now go back to his body with all the other memories that he has?
Tony,
that he said that there was a link between the two of us.
Here,
and he might have jumped that link right before he died.
Here's how he changes, is when he's throwing him out of the building.
He says, I killed him. That's a line I can never cross back. I know I've done this.
Yeah, he goes, that's a line I swore I'd never cross. Now I'll have to find a way to live with that. But he says in there, I can never be Spider-Man again.
Yeah.
So, now, you can bring him back, but...
Why?
Yeah. Okay, wait. No,
We've already had one.
Why?
Had the many times when he's reset shit.
The number one reason? Because killing him sold 250,000 copies already.
Bringing him back
will sell probably at least 200,000.
Yeah.
That's why.
I will piss on that book.
That'd be awesome.
And then buy another copy to read.
Well, why don't you read it and then piss on it? Come on.
Or piss on it, then read it, and then wash your hands. Why waste the money twice?
then they'll sell 200,000 in one copy.
Yeah.
Well,
200,000 and number one copy.
Where can the story go from here that hasn't been told with Peter Parker Spider-Man?
Here's the thing is, more than likely, I would like to see that what would end up happening is that Otto Octavius' personality will go further in the background. That Peter's will come forward,
and
Otto's will go back.
But he'll can't date Mary Jane because then she might get hurt.
No. So he'll do a lot of the same things that Superior has done, but he'll still be Peter Parker. And he'll be Peter Parker by name, he'll be Peter Parker by thought, by soul, by everything else. Because
Peter Parker more than having them just stay dead?
No.
Would that not take him to be the evil person?
Tony, my son is like 11 months old. And when he watches anything related to Spider-Man, who's Spider-Man? Peter Parker. And if you try to tell him, well, he used to be Peter Parker, but now he's actually Otto Octavius, but he's calling himself Peter Parker. Just like Batman, when Batman's dead and someone else picks up the cowl and is Batman for a little while, eventually who comes back? Bruce Wayne. Because Bruce Wayne is freaking Batman.
Now,
like Peter Parker is Spider-Man.
The problem with your argument is that Milo is 11 months, so number one, I don't think he actually knows Peter Parker.
Yes, he does.
And number two, I don't think he necessarily has been around long enough to really... understand the consequences of the mind switching and all that.
My rebuttal?
Maybe.
Ultimate Spider-Man.
What about him?
Is Spider-Man always Peter Parker?
Here's the thing is, in those comic books,
you're saying the Ultimate World doesn't count.
No, Ultimate World doesn't count.
Ultimate World counts in the fact that it's the Ultimate World, and they actually have a different body, a different person, a different soul, a different human being.
Age of Apocalypse is not Marvel 616.
But hold on a second. Here is, everyone is still going to be calling him Peter. He's not going to go around saying, call me Otto. Call me Otto Octavius. He's going to be going around, yeah, I'm Peter. I'm Peter Parker. Everyone's going to call him Peter. He's going to be Peter at the Daily Bugle. And the only time you'll hear that he's Otto Octavius...
No, he won't. He doesn't work there.
No, I'm sorry, Horizon Labs.
Yeah.
The only time that you're going to hear him call himself Otto is in his own mind. His own mind is the only place where that's going to be different. And so it creates a really cool character. I can't remember who's picking up Spider-Man now that Slott's done.
No, actually, Slott is still...
Well, Slott's still...
Slott's still writing.
I think that what he's done is he's given himself the opportunity to tell some really cool stories, to answer some questions of, like, why didn't Spider-Man ever do something like that?
Right.
Like, he's fighting the Scorpion and he punches him in the jaw. Why? Because the jaw's the only place that's not armored.
Yeah.
Like, that is so smart.
Oh, and in that, well, like, I mean, I was surprised and happy that they didn't really show it.
Yeah.
But when he punches him, and they're
he took his jaw clean off.
Dude, I looked all over that page trying to find the jaw fly off.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying, is like, this is gonna be a fun Spider-Man to do. And you know why? You know
Did
why
you Peter just Parker say you hated this whole thing?
I do hate the whole thing. This is me trying to be optimistic. But think about when you bring Peter Parker back, right? The mess that Otto Octavius has made of his life.
But he's not going to.
He's gonna do some things that are cooler, and he's gonna do something that's like, oh, Mary Jane really wanted to, but he dismisses Mary Jane because he's Otto. And he's like, oh, no, but I want to be there.
Okay, now here's, speaking of Mary Jane, she's going to be the first one to know that it's not really Peter, because she's going to be like, you never did it like that before. You know?
What?
Wow, you're really into that whole fisting with your whole arm thing.
All eight of them.
Exactly where I was going. Thank you, Tony.
Ah, visual image I did not want.
But now, here's a little thing. I told you guys about this in Last Call last week, and I wrote about it on our Last Call that I put up on the website. Daredevil number 21 that came out last week. You guys, if you are collectors and you collect for the potential that your book will ever be worth any kind of money ever, Amazing Spider-Man number 700 isn't. I already told you, they already have sold over 250,000 copies. Book isn't going to be worth shit ever. My personal opinion.
Then why'd you get a variant?
What's that?
Then why'd you get a variant?
Because I like the color. I like the cover on that one better. It was the same price.
Oh.
So, you know. Yeah.
Touché.
And now...
Same way I get the baby variants, because they make me laugh.
Yeah. And this was the exact same price. I mean, it wasn't like a special, like, 1 in 25 or whatever. But Daredevil number 21 has actually the first appearance of Superior Spider-Man. It's the very tail end of it. And it's kind of cool because Kirsten McDuffie, I think, is Matt Murdock's current girlfriend. She's the assistant DA. And she goes, at the end, asking for help because she thinks that Daredevil, a.k.a. Matt Murdock, is a menace to both himself and society. And go ahead and say it, Tony. You're laughing. Menace to society. Come on, you got something?
No, I got nothing.
Hey, does this AK match my sneakers, or should I go with a shotgun and my flip-flops? But, so, anyway, at the end, she's asking him for help, and he goes, I understand exactly what you're asking me. He goes, I will find him, and I will crush him. And it's Superior Spider-Man at the end. She's like, wait, what? Which is kind of cool, because, like, you don't know if he's doing it because he's evil, or if he's doing it because he's like, all right, here's my first super bad guy, or now turned bad guy, that I can eradicate and save the world. So it's that fucked up logic of having the duality of these two people in there that I think. But full circle on this, if you guys want to buy a book that might be worth money, go buy Daredevil 21, because I guarantee it's a hell of a lot smaller print than Spider-Man 7.
Well, I know the stories are going to be even just better, just because you've grown with the formula of what happens. Spider-Man gets beat up a bit, does the one-liner, and then somehow webs them up, you know, sticks them to the wall, and then the police come and web-slings away. From one of the previews that I had seen, he was fighting, I forget exactly who, but then he all of a sudden says, screw this, I'm not getting beat up anymore, that hurt. And then starts swinging away, and the bad guys are like, wait, Spider-Man doesn't, where are you going? He goes, see you guys later. Like, it was very refreshing, I should say.
Was that the preview of Superior?
Yeah.
Okay. Which, by the way, I saw that on Ryan Stegman's, I think it was his Tumblr page, or maybe it's just his blog, but go to his blog, Ryan Stegman's blog, and you can see it there. That ties into one other thing for anybody that uses the Marvel AR. Tony, did you know that there's an Easter egg in there?
No.
That there is actually an AR page that doesn't say AR on it?
Really?
Yeah.
What, did you just randomly scan every page, or you...
You found that on the internet.
Actually, I found it, I think it was in USA Today.
Oh, wow.
Which, the actual newspaper article, which we're coming to that next, by the way.
That they didn't spoil it?
No. It came out the same fucking day.
Oh, okay.
So, the very, very last page of the main story, where it actually says the end, it has the Superior Spider-Man. If you scan that using your Marvel AR, it gives you the first script page from Dan Slott to Ryan Stegman on there.
Hmm.
Kind of cool. Yeah. Now it makes me want to start scanning every fucking page in every fucking book, seeing what they're hiding in there. So there you go, listeners. There's your little tip from me.
Well, let's move on from, I mean, I think we've run its course with how awesome Superior is going to be. What about the other two stories that were in the book? What do you think of those?
You know, I started reading the first one, and I ended up skimming to the end, and then I didn't read the last one.
Did you read those, Matt?
No.
You guys both suck.
I'm just reading this this preview for Superior, though. It says, Peter Parker spent a lifetime living up to the responsibilities his powers foisted upon him. Nice use of the word foisted, and now I'm going to have to go look it up in the dictionary to see if they used it right.
Because the only way you know how to use that word is without the O in it.
Foisted.
Fisted.
Well, the other two stories... Wait,
before we get to that, there's a little bit more on the Spider-Man 700.
Well, this is 700 still. We can get to yours in a sec. I just wanted to
quick
mention...
We're talking about the two stories at the end.
Yeah, the two stories at the end, which have nothing to really do with canon or anything. They're just two fun stories of Spider-Man. The first one is a future person that is telling the story of he was, but it's very awesome in the way that it was written as being like a fairy tale type thing or a memory of him being younger. But when you're seeing him talk about the bad guys and the good guys, very funny telling how... They're all mixed.
Yeah, they're all mixed up, thing in the hall.
Yeah, and yeah. Just from old age and memory, and then you come to find out at the end of it, the person wasn't lying. He really was Spider-Man, and he takes his grandson web-slinging. It's not canon, it's not nothing. It's
but was he really Spider-Man, or...
Just had the web-slingers, or he was someone else?
Or did he roofie his grandkid?
He would have roofied him. He would put an LSD in it.
The other one was kind of a cute one.
Black Cat goes on a date or
yeah.
a date night. For
and it
Black
was
Cat.
it was another just fun story to tell.
I'll
of
read
Spider-Man.
It.
But like I said, it has nothing to do with canon. But that's some of the other 104 pages that you pay those $8 for. So you might as well.
I will read it. It's just, you know, I got sidetracked reading some other actually fun stuff, back issues and this and that.
The helicarrier's got blimps holding it up.
Yep.
Now, here's something before we get off the actual main story in 700. We've talked about people spoiling shit online.
Yep.
And we talked about Marvel
spoiling
shit.
Their own shit.
So, Dan Slott, now, I read this in an article, and once again, I didn't mark it down, so I can't credit where I heard this from, but it made me laugh, and I hope to God this is true. If it's only rumor, it's still a great fucking story. Dan Slott had said, and I know that he's done this online, that anybody that he finds out that's spoiling his stories before they actually hit the shelves, he's blocking them from his social media. So Marvel sends out their fucking press release, which comes out in USA Today first thing in the morning, before any comic book stores can open, and says, "We killed Peter Parker." He blocked Marvel from his social
media. Nice job, Dan Slott.
I hope to God that's true. That, to me, was fucking fantastic.
A friend of mine texted me on Wednesday and said, "So, apparently they killed Peter Parker." And I said, "We'll see. I haven't read it yet." But I'm like, "Jerk! Don't bring it up." And then
yeah.
I said, yeah, whatever. He's comic book dead.
Why? Okay. I understand the need to tell stories. People were going to buy this comic book anyways. Why did they need to go to the press to tell them the shit?
Because
make some random press person actually buy the fucking book.
Because, Tony, what are the ways that you sell a shitload of comics? I mean, what you've got a handful of them.
You build up...
You kill somebody. That's number one.
Crossover.
Crossovers. Relationships.
Yeah.
AKA maybe even sex.
Mm. That you don't get to see because Marvel won't print boobies.
You'll never see the fisting of Doc Ock to Mary Jane.
Or I'm just thinking of the thing fisting.
Or the clawing, I guess, is it? Would it be? I don't know. You have something that is controversial, whether it's gay characters, gay marriages, you know, abortion.
You bring a character back from the dead.
Yep, and then you bring a character back from the dead. Those are pretty much how you sell comic books.
But as comic book readers, you know, A, it's the last issue. You knew going up to the point something big was going to happen. Why does it need to be in the fucking paper on the same day? So, why does Marvel need to let the press know that ahead of time so it runs a print?
Agreed. Like, and I actually, which is really funny because since I've started this podcast, my dad has actually started asking me questions about comic books. and I had lunch with him and my mom, my sister today, and my dad was asking me about this because he's actually scanned that newspaper article and sent it to me from USA Today. And I explained to him, I go, you know, I said, my problem is not them printing this. My problem is them printing this on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Print it on Thursday.
Yeah. Marvel, give the press release to them in the afternoon.
Yeah, so but they I think fans are going to be smart. Well, hopefully fans are smart enough.
Fans are smart enough,
but then their parents aren't. Because I remember my mom saved me a newspaper clipping saying that Captain America was going to dead. But this was like weeks before. I think it was like a week before Captain America actually died.
Yeah, so the whole point is, you are stealing money out of your own fucking pocket when you do that. Because if word of mouth gets around on that first day, you're going to have people who maybe haven't been into a comic book store in a long time going, what? Peter Parker's dead? Because they maybe heard about it here or there. Yeah. And they're going to go in. But you're ruining it for all your true fucking fans.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest problem. You know, I did everything I could to avoid spoilers, and it was fucking hard.
Yeah. And how many of these recent books, Spider-Man in particular, have been spoiled because Marvel keeps jumping the gun? Because they keep on thinking it needs to be in the paper Tuesday night.
Print is dead.
Professor X's death in AVX.
They even showed the
fucking splash.
Yeah, the splash of when he dies, so...
Yeah, I mean, that just pissed me off because, you know, and part of it is because I'm curious, but the other part is because we do this podcast and we try and keep current on all the news. You go and look, and when it's in the fucking headline...
Yeah. Well...
Marvel kills Peter Parker! God damn
it! You know what Marvel really killed, though? Marvel really killed the fact that 700's a big number. We can't count that high. Let's go back to number one.
Yeah, but because everybody loves number ones. Fuck that. But, you know, here's the thing, Tony. You're right. People would have gone out and bought this, but are they going to buy it? Are they going to sell 250,000 copies?
Yeah, they still would, because guess what?
No, they wouldn't.
Guarantee you people are going to listen to our podcast or listen to it later or the next day hear about it and then go buy it.
Now,
but to do a press release the day of in the morning is you're committing backlash from your fans, the people that you want to keep buying the books.
Well, we have two separate things here going on. Number one, I agree with you. Marvel,
I agree with
give
you
it a that. Day. You know, I mean, we have our unspoken rule of 24 hours, no spoilers. You know, 24-hour moratorium on spoilers from the time that the book hits the shelf. That's kind of our own rule, and I get it. So, yes, I agree with you there. The second thing is, I don't think they would have sold 250,000 copies of issue number 700, even being the final issue, because why did we start reading this? We started reading this because we knew that Peter Parker was no longer going to be Spider-Man, that this was ending, that there was some huge buildup. They teased just enough.
Yeah, they teased before. I could have not read USA Today and still would have bought it. I would have read from the news that I go to and the blogs that I read.
Tony, but we already agreed that the problem is that USA Today did it too quickly. So take that away.
I don't blame USA Today.
Well, Marvel.
Marvel sent the press release.
So. USA Today wants to be the first to,
Yeah. And, well, you can't blame them. Their paper comes out once a day. So, you know, when they get that press release on Tuesday, they run the article, send it to the printer so that it's printed and shipped out first thing Wednesday morning.
Well, so, all right. Well, here's a quick question because I know we have to wrap things up here pretty soon, though.
Eventually.
Just as we're wrapping up the rest of the year. So what has been your favorite comic book event or favorite comic storyline? Just your favorite thing about comics for the year 2012.
I've got a couple.
Let's go with your number one, then we'll see Sony.
I don't know what my number one is. So I'm just going to give one of them. Fanboys versus Zombies. Just fucking pure fun. Pure fucking fun. They finished issue 9 here a week or two ago. 2 weeks ago, although I didn't get it until a week ago because Diamond Distribution shorted my shop. Even though they said they shipped it, they didn't. Bastards. But that has been one of my favorite books. It's the one that I look forward to most. It's the one when I get it, I read it first because I'm just so happy. And it's kind of like a Where's Waldo or like, you know, when I was a kid, Golden Bug, those Golden Bug books. You know, I was trying to find where the fuck that little bug was in the picture, even though that wasn't the main story. There's so many little Easter eggs in there. You know, like the last issue, they had a Borat zombie in there, you know. Or you get the guy dressed up like Cable that's a zombie. Or you get the, you know, the LARPers as zombies, you know.
D20.
Yeah. That kind of shit is just great, and it's good story. So awesome. That's Tony? One of my big ones.
It's something that I haven't talked about, but if I'm really going to truly put one of the stories that I've read that has just been phenomenal, and it just it's been I've been waiting for the good time to talk about, is the new Voltron series. Hands down, it's very, very well done. It's continuing the story from the cartoon shows that we've known, but exploring the past. I think I might have talked to you guys before of King Zarkon and where he came from and how the Lions were formed, how the Alliance, the International Federation...
The Galactic Alliance.
Yeah. How they formed and ultimately where they've come from and where they're going now. Great two stories that are coming. I believe it's Dynamite that's been doing those ones.
Yeah,
and
cool.
Just the Voltron series, both year one and the ongoing one, just been great.
Matt,
I was particularly happy with the Versus books. I thought that it was a really cool way to get some more of those actions that you didn't have to buy them. They even say that right on the front cover. You're not missing anything of the main storyline if you don't get these books. But, man, they were just a lot of fun, and we couldn't put them in the regular print.
You know what's funny about that is I agree with you. I had a blast with the majority of those stories in there.
Yep, most of them.
Especially the last issue, which was funny as shit.
Yeah.
But, conversely, the A-plus X... Read one issue and I was done.
Yeah, the team ups afterwards.
Yeah,
yeah. Done. I didn't even feel like I needed to read any of those.
Yeah.
The one my only one complaint I talked about it before was the fact that one of the coolest battles that didn't happen in the pages was Colossus versus Magic.
Yeah.
When they both cancel out each other's powers, why that wasn't in probably its own standalone versus book, I don't know, but that really bugged me.
So. Let's just do something else here then.
Well, I want to know what you guys' favorite Spider-Man is, since we've been talking about it.
Favorite Spider-Man?
Whether cartoon,
all seven or
cartoons, seven movies,
or, yeah.
Actually, it's a toss-up, and actually, I had to look it up. I think it was Spider-Man 211, Amazing Spider-Man number 211. When I was a little kid, Spider-Man fought Submariner, and it was one of those comics that my dad bought for me when we were up fishing, up north fishing, and I read it like 40 times, you know, over and over and over, and I always took it fishing with me, and I loved it. That, as far as comic book, as far as a media, you know, visual media, not comic media, Spider-Man and his spider friends.
Wow. Right. Lame.
Firestar and
Moving
Iceman.
On.
Yeah. Tony. Fuck you guys.
I think I have to go with you might remember the one when he was shot into space.
Spider-Man Unlimited.
Yeah.
Where he went to Counter-Earth and was fighting the High Evolutionary.
Yes. That to me was just a different Spider-Man that I'd never read about that was just awesome.
Fun. Yeah. My favorite Spider-Man, I just got into the Ultimate Spider-Man comic or the TV show that they did, and it kind of plays like one of those high school kid shows where like he makes a lot of asides to the camera and makes little funny explanations. And
so he's Deadpool.
Yeah, actually, my wife was watching it with me, and she actually goes, "This Peter Parker seems a lot like Deadpool." And I kind of was like, I had to agree with her, and also had to give her a huge hug for knowing what Deadpool should be like.
So she would have gotten that Jeopardy question.
She totally got that Jeopardy. She got that entire category. That's like probably my favorite. That's just a new show that is out there. But I think my favorite comic series is when Bendis restarted with Ultimate Spider-Man. I thought that some of the retellings were very awesome, and I pretty much collected almost that entire series. I didn't get to the end, though, and see how they killed Spider-Man off in that world. But that just made me think the fact that, wait, Spider-Man's been killed before.
You know what, though? Come to think of it, I did buy that fucking comic because they killed Spider-Man. I didn't buy any others. So, proof, I'm, as a fanboy, I'm a sucker. And I even bought that one. So tell me, Tony, there's your fucking reason. Killing characters sells fucking comics.
So I wasn't saying that it doesn't. Yeah. I was just saying you didn't read about it in USA Today, did you?
No, but that's because I knew it was coming.
But I tell you what, you know what? Probably my favorite Spider-Man thing was I played a video game, the Spider-Man Shadows of the Web of Shadows or something. But it was like the symbiote came into New York, and you were both Venom and him trying to fight these symbiotes. But it was a really fun video game. It was probably my favorite of all the Spider-Man games.
So nobody said the live action Spider-Man. Yeah.
Nah.
Well, Derek, you had a question for us?
A question for you.
You were going to say, like, probably what's the worst thing, or?
Oh, no. Well, actually, I did have a couple other things that I thought were awesome this year. Uncanny X-Force coming to a conclusion. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. But my best one that has not ended, but I'm going to be hard-pressed, I think, to be disappointed on this one, is Daredevil End of Days.
Okay.
So,
yeah,
you know, that could be... I'm going to call it a 2013 because that's when it's going to conclude. But okay. For 2012, pretty fucking awesome start. Cool. You guys have any others that really popped out?
Well,
to you?
I have to say that, you know, I think the best podcast of 2012 was Drunk on Comics.
Well, and actually, it was it was voted on and proved to be that on our good friends the Illuminati.
Thank you guys very much.
Yeah. So
thank you, fans, for who voted.
Yeah, which is awesome. Because,
did we get a check?
No, there's no check.
Do we get to drink more beer?
Well, cheers.
For beer! Yay!
So, that was awesome. I do have a last call, and I do have a booze in a book.
Booze in a book it.
All right, booze in a book. I did Uncanny X-Men, number 143, 1981, circa, in case you're curious. Written by Chris Claremont, art by John Byrne, inks and the cover by Terry Austin. Like I said, this book came out in 1981, so it's kind of like a Kevin's Long Box, or maybe it could be something that would be off the shelf with the rest of his new stuff at his Magic Time Traveling comic book shop. Not really sure. I am pairing this book with some Bacardi 151 and eggnog. And I don't normally like rum, nor do I really care for Christmas specials. Which this book technically is, but when they're utilized properly, like these two are, they can be a hell of a lot of fun. This is a Kitty Pryde solo story, and really it's actually her first solo story. And kind of like the cocktail, the book's a little sweet. It definitely makes you a little warm inside, and I highly recommend both when you're curling up on the couch during a cold winter night. They both pack a hell of a punch, and they go down smooth. So
I also like on the cover, there's a little Spider-Man there down in the bottom.
Well,
I think that's the 20th anniversary or
25th, maybe?
Yeah.
20th? 25th? I don't know. But, yeah. Although, I do have to say one thing that I find funny is that it's the Merry Christmas issue starring Kitty Pryde, who's Jewish.
Is she really?
Yeah.
Well done. Well done. We converted some people there.
Yeah. My last call this week was Mara number 1 of 5 from Brian Wood, Ming Doyle, and Jordy Belair. It's an image book. Took a hell of an interesting twist. I liked it for number 1. I'm curious. I'm buying number 2. We'll see if I continue after that. But it was worth a read. Yeah. My other book I already mentioned, that's not my last call, though.
Gotcha.
My last call was The Amazing Spider-Man, number 7.
Guys, I just came to my mind just, like, all of a sudden worked for a second.
What?
And I came to two revolutions.
No. Oh, okay, your mind
your revelations?
Your mind stopped working because they are revelations.
Go on.
One, the reason why there are no comic books out this week is because retailers and the comic book industry knew we didn't have any money because of Christmas.
Oh.
No. Two, no, we didn't have any money because we spent it all the week before, you fucking dicks.
I'm kind of happy, though, because my wallet has been needing it. Number two, I have to agree with both of you guys now. Peter Parker is going to be back. In fact, I can guarantee you I know when he's going to come back. In 2014, when Amazing Spider-Man number 2 comes out and hits theaters, they're going to have to bring him back in comic book form in order for it to tie in with the movies so that they can cash cow into both.
So that my son will always know Peter Parker as Spider-Man.
Not necessarily, because movie profits go to Sony, not to Marvel.
Yeah, but...
They could be doing all this just to fuck with Sony.
We're going to make our own Spider-Man movie, but it's not Peter Parker. Yes! It's Otto Octavius.
That is fucking fantastic.
And with that note, we leave you in 2012.
I do have a shout-out. Speaking of Spider-Man, happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
To Stan the Man Lee.
Oh, I thought you were going to say happy birthday to my mom.
No.
Or to me.
But it's
Tony's birthday is coming up.
Or our dog Saber, because it was Saber's birthday. No, Stan Lee is probably the most important to Stan our Lee listeners, is the our most fans. Important. So, happy birthday, Stan Lee.
Happy 90th, Excelsior. Also,
You made it to 90.
And, I'm wishing him another solid 90 years,
mm-hmm.
Especially so that we can see him in May at Motor City Comic Con.
Yeah, Motor City Comic Con. By the way, I do love that he answered a lot of the letters in the back of the 700. That's really cool.
The best question that was posed, which was not answered, was... Why hasn't Peter Parker ever made a warning sign of when his webbing from his things are ever going to run low? You know, there's always in the middle of battle, it all of a sudden runs low. And Stan Lee dodged that question, which I know he did.
Artfully. Artfully dodged.
Actually, that leads to another great...
No, point. We have no time for that. We have to...
We'll leave this one unanswered. Why doesn't his spider sense tell him he's running low? He doesn't need a sensor. But by the way, though, big shout out to Motor City Comic Con, where Stan Lee will be at, and we will be at May 17th, 18th, 19th.
And since the Mayan apocalypse was wrong, because there is only one apocalypse, and that's Cable's villain to fight, we're still here.
Yeah.
For the next year.
So that will be at Suburban Collection Showplace in Novi, Michigan. Go check them out, MotorCityComicCon.com. That does it for me, I think. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Drink lots of beer, champagne, shots, whatever you like. If you like milk, have a shot of milk if you don't drink. That's okay. We're all right with
that. Hey, if you're going to drink like a fish, drink what the fishes drink.
Whoa. Hey, although I think this is a good one. This is something that then I'll shut up, maybe. My grandfather used to have a great saying, and New Year's Eve it always comes into play. You're not drunk till you have to hold on to the grass to keep from falling off the edge of the world.
Amen.
With that, we're drunk on comics, and we will see you guys later.
See ya.
See ya, we're a podcast.
What the fuck?
Spider-Man. Never a spider game. In the red, any size can catch your feet. Just like guys, look out. Go Spider-Man.
Everyone. Ba-ba-da! Oh, no, Tony missed it. This ain't karaoke.
You know, Spider-Man was... There was a female character.
It is terrible. All right, guys. Happy New Year. On behalf of everybody here at Drunk on Comics, keep reading those books. See you next week.
God, shut up, Tony.